A funny thing happens when you have nothing left to live for. Your existence loses all its sharp edges. There are no more steep drops, no hills to climb. Colors blur and muddle together until your surroundings are a bunch of meaningless shapes and figures painted in the same shade of gray. There's nothing that could possibly surprise you or resurrect those old sensations of joy or fear. No human could be as unfeeling, as numb as you are. And then, just when you're getting lulled into the monotonous routine, something snaps. No more. I hope I won't be judged harshly for what I'm about to do. The truth is, I'm not sure I ever had a choice. This day has been beckoning me for a year. Ever since the water rose up and swallowed our city, I'm supposed to be one of the lucky ones because I survived. But that couldn't be further from the truth. There's nothing lucky about hearing the screams of the dead every time you close your eyes, or waking up each morning alone, forced to remember all over again. The horror never loosens its grip. It follows everywhere you move, breathing down your neck, whispering in your ear. I glance up at the clock, the numbers blinking 4:35 a.m. It's time to make my exit, before the neighbors wake up and spot me. But first, I let myself take one last look at home, or what remains of it. The fourth floor of our pensione, once known as the Michelangelo suite, is all that survived the flood. The high tide and storm swells pulled the first three floors under that day, sentencing everyone in those rooms to the worst kind of death. I should have gone down with them. I would have, if it hadn't been for the couple in the Michelangelo suite requesting room service, sending me to the top floor with a breakfast tray at the moment the waves crashed through the windows below. You could say those hungry guests in this room saved me. But why? Why should I have survived with a couple of strangers when my family was drowning? My eyes linger on the remnants of them that I salvaged from the seafloor. Papa's threadbare slippers sit on the ottoman beside Mama's Elena Ferrante novel, the corner of page 152 turned down to mark her place. The ink is smeared, the words running together like tears, yet I can still see that the page ends in an incomplete sentence. One more thing Mama never got to finish. Angelica beams at me from her last school photo, and I pick up the cracked silver frame from its shelf. I study my little sister's bright eyes and dimpled smile one last time, memorizing her features. And then, I take a breath and pull back the heavy sheet metal that covers the door, protecting against the tide. This room once opened into a bright hallway, lined with paintings, surrounding a stone staircase, but that was before La Grande Inondazione, the greatest flood Rome has ever known. Now the Tyrrhenian Sea laps at my doorstep, and when I venture outside, only a small wooden ledge separates me from the water. In this new Rome, the only place to go is up. Each surviving structure has a ledge, or a makeshift dock like mine, that connects to the passerelle, raised walkways far above the ground that lead us like a map to the places we need most. The upper stories of the basilica, hospital, and city hall, the Wi-Fi cafe, and even the public school's remaining classrooms are all accessible from here. Of course, most of us stopped going to school after the flood. The Wi-Fi cafe is the most common gathering place for the survivors, and where I'd ordinarily be heading myself in a few hours to watch the news with my neighbors and listen to accounts of similar catastrophes wreaking havoc in other parts of the world. It's our daily reminder that the earth doesn't hate us alone. We've all seen the jarring photos of New York's Times Square its bright thoroughfares transformed into a deep river marked by the roofs of sagging Broadway theaters. We followed the never-ending media reports about the curious case of our disappearing beaches, from America to Australia and beyond. The sea change is coming for everyone, rich and poor alike.